Hello, Canadian television nerds. My name is Greg David, and welcome to TV ABCs, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, a conversation with Samantha Wan. Samantha Wan is a Toronto-based actor and filmmaker who recently received a 2019 Canadian Screen Award nomination in the category of Best Comedy Series for her sitcom Second Gen. Second Gen is a buddy comedy about two second-generation millennials making it on their own in the big city. Season 1 aired on the major Canadian network City TV, and Season 2 was later picked up by Omni Television. Samantha developed the series with actress and screenwriter Amanda Joy. The two became the youngest television creators in Canada. Samantha is also known for her role as Zoe Chow in the comedy-drama television series Private Eyes, starring Jason Priestley and Cindy Sampson. We'll hear all about this and more in my conversation with Samantha Wan. Well, Samantha, you and I have spoken several times over the years for Second Gen. We've also discussed a little bit about working with Jason Priestley. So it's great to we're just going to talk about you today. We're not going to talk about anybody else. It's all about you for the next half hour. So thank you for taking the time.
Oh my goodness, thank you for like being here throughout like this whole journey that I've been on.
Yes, and you have been on quite a journey in just a short number of years. So before we get into things like Second Gen, before we get into talking about your Canadian Screen Award nomination, let's go back to the beginning, and I'm going to refer to the Adobe PDF of your life, which says that you found Samantha found her passion for film and acting at a young age in high school. From there, she was accepted into the country's top theater school, the National Theater School of Canada, which boasts a number of notable notable alumni, including award-winning actress Sandra Oh. So, have you always wanted to go this way, go into the arts and specifically into acting, writing, and directing? Was it kind of predetermined for you?
I kind of was into the performing arts when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
I kind of, before I acted, I danced and I sang a bit and I played the piano. So then when this musical came up, it was The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. It kind of seemed like a natural thing to be like, well, why don't I try acting and then I can do it all? And I played Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz in middle school. Yeah. And then in high school, I was super lucky to go to a school that had a theater and really fostered my acting.
Yeah.
I like went through all the acting classes within the first 2 years and they had nothing left for me.
Wow.
So I started they kind of made my own program for me where I just started then directing all the other students, like the younger students than me and like making projects.
Yeah.
Just because I couldn't get enough of it.
That's crazy, you know, that you found your passion so quickly. I mean, it wasn't until grade 12 that I realized that writing might be in my, you know, background. But yeah, from a very early age, you knew that this is what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I was really lucky. I mean, with my parents, at first I wanted to be a visual artist. I loved drawing.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, "You're going to become a poor person on the street." Cried. I gave up drawing. And then I went up to my mom and I was like, "Mom, I might be an actor." And she looked at my dad with this stink eye of like, "If you say anything."
Yeah.
And he was supportive from then on in what I did. So acting was like my second round at trying to be an artist.
So what about now? I mean, you know, obviously your mom gave your dad the stink eye, but how does he feel now about this career that his daughter has made her way in for a few years now?
He's really happy now. I think once I got into the National Theatre School,
yeah,
he sort of, cause it's kind of like our Juilliard equivalent. We have a lot of same teachers and stuff like that. I think he was finally kind of like, "Oh, you can do this." And then now he's like, "Oh, like your job and my job are so similar." He sells power plants. So
wow.
He likes to be like, "Yeah." And he's also, my dad's very competitive with me. So he'll be like, "You know, I think I could have done that." And I'm like, "Okay, Dad."
Yeah. That's the best when people, you know, say, "Oh, I could have been an editor or I could have been a writer, but I chose a different path." I'm like, "Yeah, okay."
Yeah, I imagine you get that like a lot. And be like, "Oh, like when I retire, I'm thinking about writing something."
Yeah.
Or like, "I thought that might be fun to try."
Right, to try on a whim.
Yeah.
One of the projects I wanted to ask you about on your IMDb page, and this actually looks like it might be the first one, unless IMDb is wrong, is playing Ophelia Bedelia on Ruby Sky PI. A fantastic little show that when I first took over running TVA, I was introduced to. I loved that show. What was it like being part of it?
It was really great. Jill Golic and I are friends.
Yeah.
Now she's the creator of the show.
Yeah.
And she, yeah, that was my first role was like on a little horror film. And then I think Ophelia was my second role, but that one was like a bit bigger. That was the first time I went on set and people were like, Samantha Wan is in the building. And I was like, oh my God, what's happening?
Yeah.
And it's also a very fun set. Like Jill's writing is very fun and it kind of has like the Nancy Drew vibe to it.
Yes.
And it was really fun to play such Ophelia's like such an out there character. She's like a librarian who's like is always sneezing, and then spoiler alert, she's like the bad guy at the end.
Okay.
So that was a really fun thing for me to get to do.
What I like about a lot of the children's programming, you know, particularly a show like Ruby Sky, but you know, other children's programming that's out there, is how smart it is, especially in this country. The writing is entertaining and it's great for kids, but I also, just from, you know, a show like Ruby Sky, like I just mentioned, there are a lot of kids programs here in this country that I watch and really enjoy just because there's such good quality. And you want to comment on that, the children's genre in this country?
Yeah, I actually I feel very strongly about the children's genre in Canada because of knowing Jill. Like, we have some of the top children's content, I think, in the world, and that's not just even personal. Like, I know that like Jill was writing on Sesame Street and things like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know like the guys who did the puppetry, like with Fraggle Rock and stuff like that. We create really great content, and what I think also makes it so great. And working with Jill too, and other youth animators and stuff, is that they don't pander kids.
Yep.
If they're dumb, they treat them with respect. They treat them with knowledge that they can figure things out. And that's something I think is really key. I used to work in children's theater as well, and to treat them kind of like little investigators, like little scientists, figuring things out. When I did like baby theater.
Yeah.
They take play very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need to pander down to them.
Right, right. Which I think is really important. You know, it isn't all about the pratfall. It isn't all about, you know, the silly scene of somebody being, you know, splashed with some slime or something like that. Like, you know, the kids are there and they're invested. So write smart for them.
Mm-hmm. I think with some of our most successful stuff has been actually, I think, kids programming in Canada.
Yeah.
As an actual, like, thing we output to the world.
Have you ever thought about writing a kids program?
I haven't thought about writing a kids TV show, though I would. I love doing animation and voices.
Ah.
So that's something I'd like to do more in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely a kids play that I've kind of thought about wanting to do, but it's one of those things where it's like, you have so many ideas, what will you do?
Right, right. When it comes to writing, and we're going to get to second gen in a second, when it comes to writing a play, I would think that writing a play is very different from writing a TV show or a web series. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, just theater in general has a lot more workshopping.
Okay.
In the sense of, it's really normal to write something and then bring in actors, have them do it, and then like work with the directors, play around with it, and have some time, then go back and do another iteration.
Mm.
Like, not my first play, but a play that I did for a while, Madame Mao. I think we did 5 iterations until like we got to what we were.
Hmm.
And it was mostly done through improv and then writing. And then
okay.
Improv and writing, which is so like the rehearsal process and stuff is so different, like in film, that you just don't get that luxury as much.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. So let's get to second gen, co-created, by yourself and Amanda Joy. 2 seasons of second gen have been broadcast in Canada. What has that experience been like? It's one thing to be in front of the camera, which the two of you did with a bunch of people in the cast as well, but I'm interested in the behind the scenes thing. What has that experience been like writing for primetime television in this country? Has it been a positive experience? And what have you learned about yourself as a writer?
It's been a great experience, a very life-changing experience. Yeah. Also having to get through hurdles, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What has it been like? Because especially for me, I wasn't a writer when I first started. I was more of a director.
Yeah.
So there was a very steep learning curve for me. When I first learned how to do television, like learning about the Bible even at first, before we were even really allowed to work on a script.
Wow.
The Bible was the thing that was like, rewrite this. I think I still have like 20 versions of that Bible on my computer of how many times we rewrote the characters and we rewrote the settings and all these things. And probably only, so sorry.
That's all right.
Probably only like 50% of the Bible makes it.
Wow.
Into the show. And then it's like, oh my gosh, we spent so long like pitching the Bible.
Yeah.
So that was like, that was an experience and really learning how I feel like a big thing that I learned was also in writing that Bible, and then I'll get to the scripts, but in writing that pitching and writing that Bible, I was like, oh, how important it is to make things, really pop in the sentence, but also of substance. Cause I can, I feel like now I can really read things where I'm like, wow, this has a lot of substance, but it's hard to read. It doesn't make me remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But then other ones that are like, it's funny, it's comedy. It's like, you don't say it's funny, it's comedy. Like, make it a funny sentence.
Right. Right.
Because that, then there's no substance. I have no idea what's happening. And that was a lot of learning of how to craft that.
Wow.
And then it kind of became a big thing too in the writing room too, is like, there are so many jokes and things like that, but learning how to be like, okay, how we have lots of jokes, but what is this really about?
Yes.
Like, how to make it matter.
Right.
And coming to that and being okay with it, with like having to tear it down if it wasn't working.
Yeah. Right. Right. Cause like you said, you know, if you're working on the Bible and you know, 50% of it makes it through, I guess you can't be caught up in the fact that you're losing all of this. You're actually making something better. So, you know, don't waste time worrying about the pages on the floor or the files on your computer that are never going to be opened again, because at the end of this collaboration, everyone's going to be better for it.
Yeah. And like, you get better at just being like, less precious with ideas. You're like, what about this? This is the bad version.
Yeah.
This is the bad version of this. Just to put something out there. Like, I got better at doing that. I've kind of realized at the beginning, I was trying to be very linear about my writing,
mm-hmm.
which I'm just not. It's not how my brain works.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned. So like, my strength really is breaking story, being in the room and being like, okay, this is definitely going to happen as like the end of the second act. This is the first act. How do we find the middle? Like, I'm much more of like, here are all the dots. How do we connect them?
Ah.
How does this work? And I'm like, learning that about myself rather than trying to start in a linear way has been a big journey for me. And also learning how to interpret notes from a broadcaster.
Yeah.
Is a big thing. Cause like, what's, you hear other producers and people say this, like, what's the note behind the note?
Because
mm-hmm. sometimes they don't know. I was really glad, like, our broadcaster was very invested in giving notes and things like that. And,
right.
But sometimes you have to figure out, like, what's the problem?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the solution, even if you do their solution, it's not what they're looking for.
Right.
Like, what's the problem that they have? And that was like a big thing for me to learn how to do, and also to watch like Carly and Jeff, because Jeff is our showrunner in season one, Carly's season two,
mm-hmm.
how they negotiate that. Also not to panic sometimes when people come back, because everyone's scared and everyone comes back, they're like, this is awful.
Sure.
It's like, wait a couple days.
Right, right.
See what happens.
Before we get to the directing, I have one more question about writing. So what kind, you've already said that you love being in the room, you love kicking around ideas. What about when it comes to writing on your own? Do you like to be in a coffee shop? Is there a soundtrack that you listen to that gets you into the mood and make the words flow? How does it work for you?
Oh man, that's like such a great question, because I got into writing through Second Gen, so I never knew what my way of writing was before then.
Mm-hmm.
And my way of writing then was just to be in the office with like Amanda and Carly writing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Kind of, I'm in this new place now where I'm like, oh, what is the way, like, if Samantha's just writing by herself?
Yeah.
like, and writing on my own, what is the way that I like to do it? I'm finding that I like to be in a coffee shop. I'm finding that I have to be either active before I'm writing or after. Because I can't sit still for very long.
Yeah.
So that's like something that I'm really finding. I like the idea of working with music.
Yeah.
But it actually distracts me sometimes. So I don't work with it as much. Whereas I know Amanda, like, she definitely has her soundtrack. I'll definitely sometimes, if it's a character, I will find a soundtrack that I think suits the character.
Right.
Or I try to do just some intuitive writing where I just write intuitively for like 15 minutes with a soundtrack to get me going.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll probably like settle in.
So you like, but ideally it's the coffee shop with the kind of the white noise, the conversation in the background, while you're writing.
I do a weird thing where I put my headphones on, but don't put music in.
Yes, I totally get that. I actually do that as well. It's, it makes, for some weird reason, even though there's no music, it makes you focus, right?
Yeah, it totally, like, I don't know if it dampens the sound or, like, it makes it so that no one will talk to me. I don't
yeah. know. Yeah, there's a secret. Just throw on headphones any time and people will just not talk to you.
Yes, exactly.
So let's get into directing. How many episodes of Second Gen did you direct?
So I only got to direct the one episode, which was the Like a Girl episode.
Okay, yep.
Unfortunately, because they were so worried that I was acting in so much of it.
Right.
That there wasn't a lot of time for me to prep.
A legitimate concern.
Yeah. But I didn't think so at the time, but I understand. I'm appreciative for what I did do, and it was really fun. I directed all of Amanda's stuff in the Like a Girl episode where she does the sexual harassment seminar.
Yes, yes. Great scenes, by the way. Those are some of my favorite scenes, and the most memorable for me would be that, maybe because I'm a guy, and so seeing guys, you know, just seeing these schlubs, you know, acutely unaware of what they're saying can be hurtful and misunderstood was just great.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and like the guys too. It was so easy working with them because they were Second City improvised actors. And it was funny because we only had the day to shoot that. And that's a lot of, for people who don't direct, that's like a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably, I probably had, how many? I had 6 or 7 people I had to cover in that day. And so it kind of became my choice because I knew they were improvisers.
Mm-hmm.
To make them kind of this three-headed monster. So there's never any singles of them.
Right. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I wanted them to always be together so that they could improvise off each other and never had to worry about cutting. It saved me coverage. But also it was more important how they were as a group, as an entity, than as these individual characters. Although they each amazingly brought the individuality, which I wanted. But I wanted this Hydra kind of vibe to them.
What's always interesting to me is, you know, I've been lucky enough to visit the set of several shows, including Second Gen, and I'm always fascinated with the amount of time that it takes to film. I think a lot of people don't realize the logistics behind filming. You know, you're filming facing one way, and then you've got to reset, break everything down, reset, and film something, you know, from the other direction, the other face in the conversation. That's a lot of time that's taken up, and you, of course, as the director, you're having to figure out what your shots are going to be. Now, they're not on the fly. I'm assuming you planned some of this out ahead of time, but yeah, I'm always fascinated with just the sheer logistics of filming a television show and what it involves.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the set that you see that we filmed there, we are missing an entire wall.
Yeah.
It was actually a huge room that was full of crap that our wonderful team cleaned up.
Yeah.
And just made one wall look like make that one side of the room look like a legit place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it also makes it difficult because I'm like, oh, I can't, if I want this side of his face, I actually can't shoot that.
Right.
Because I'm going to be looking at the crew. And so that's like that was a whole nother set of things to figure out. And we were figuring out that while we were filming the other episodes at the same time.
Crazy. Crazy. Yeah. Good old block shooting, right?
Yep. For sure.
Now, a director that I spoke to several years ago was Ken Jurati. He's a veteran director in this country. He's directed episodes of Vikings, and he directed the first season of Pure. I think he's directed the second season as well. But when I spoke to him, he sat down and he was explaining the color palette for Pure. And I'd never realized that, not all directors do this, I'm assuming, but he knew the shades that he wanted to have, you know, filters, that he wanted to have lots of sky because sky represents God. And is that the type of thing that really gets you excited when you think about directing a project kind of from beginning to end, maybe a mini series or a series where you have that creative control over a color palette and the way something looks and feels?
Yes, that makes me so excited. Yeah. Like, I just did a short, and it's funny because when I first got into directing, because I was a theater director, mm-hmm. and I'm an actor first, I was really into just working with the actors, and I like loved it. And then I got closer to my DOP, Dave, and he started asking me those questions like, what's the color palette?
Yeah.
What do you want it to look like? And I was like, I don't know. What do you mean the color palette? There's a color palette? And I've like recently started getting into that. Like in this last film, I was like, Dave, I want these autumn colors. This is exactly what I want. And it really makes things cohesive. Like if you want your main characters to stand out in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of style that you want it to have a look to have, like with our broadcaster, they slightly dictate. They had a color palette already.
Right.
And they had like the kind of like how light it was. Like what you do is you do like a camera test, right before mm-hmm. the show, so mm-hmm. that they can see how bright we were planning on doing it. And, then they tell us how bright it is. So it's really I'm excited because I think I probably want to make another short or something else that's just mine, just to get more into like what do I feel like doing, because like the light and the color and the composition, I'm really interested in not just regular close ups and stuff like that. I really love some of these compositions I've been watching where it's a lot of it happens in a wide.
Yeah, yeah.
Or far away, or that the coverage is mostly on the person listening. I really love a lot of that, so I'm excited to experiment with that more.
And it's all part of the storytelling, right? I mean, you've got the script helping tell the story, you've got the actors and actresses performing those lines, and the direction, the color palette, all that is all part of the storytelling and just as important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because it's what's drawing your eye.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some exciting news. Actor, director, and writer Samantha Wan receives a 2019 Canadian Screen Award nomination in the category of Best Comedy Series for her original award-winning sitcom, Second Gen. So where were you when you got the phone call? Did you get it via text? Was it an email? How did you find out that you'd been nominated for a Canadian Screen Award?
well, I'm in LA right now, and you guys in Toronto are 3 hours ahead of me.
Yes.
Woke up to so many text messages. Just being like, congratulations. And I was like, on what? Who, what? What's happening? And I saw that we had gotten nominated through like so many wonderful supporting messages, congratulating us on the comedy nomination, which is like so great. That's the big one. I was not expecting that. So I'm so happy.
obviously, some people think that an award, a nomination is important. Some people don't. Where do you stand? Are you in the camp of that it's nice to be nominated and have some recognition put towards a show like Second Gen and get more, more attention for the show and more eyeballs? Or is it all about where am I going to put the trophy?
Well, yeah. I was like, I don't know if we're going to win given like how big the other big shows that we're up against. Like I'm pretty happy with it being with the nomination.
Yep.
I mean, if we win, that'll be great. And they'll be like, oh my God, great. It happened.
Yeah.
But I'm really happy that the show has recognition. I'm really happy for the overall, I think more diverse shows and things need to be recognized and seen. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy kind of like for what it does in the big picture world.
Yeah.
That way. And like that's kind of like the main thing. I try not to, whenever these things go, be like, oh, what am I going to do with the award? And what's my acceptance speech? I mean, like, it'd be great. But I don't know, maybe it's because I'm being an actor. Like, you go out for lots of auditions. So you're just like, happy this happened, and we'll see what happens after that.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, while we're still talking about second gen, one of the things that you were very proud of and made sure that second gen was from the very beginning was full of a diversity, whether it was in front of the camera or behind the camera. So you can talk a little bit about diversity. Do you think that we're headed in the right direction in this country with regard to diversity? Actually, with a show called Digstown coming up on CBC on when we're talking on March the 5th, on March the 6th, a new series on CBC with a black actress in the lead role, another case of diversity in this country. So where do you think we stand with diversity in Canada? Do you think there's enough of it in television? Should we be seeing more of it?
I think that we're heading towards the right direction. Yeah. I don't think there yet. I think we're heading in the right direction in the way that we can talk about it now.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that I definitely see a lot more breakdowns asking for diversity. I have yet to see what the casting will be, because I did get a lot of breakdowns. I used to get a lot of breakdowns asking for diversity.
Right.
The casting ended up being mainly Caucasian when I actually saw the final product.
Yeah.
So, I think we're moving in the right direction, that we're talking about it, but I think as I heard someone else say, like, we have to be careful that just talking about it isn't the change yet. So I'm still like watching. I'm still trying to be the best that I can be so that there's no excuse that we can't hire diverse people.
Right.
And also, like, I think for diverse actors, that's the best. Just be so good that no one can be like, well, there aren't any diverse actors. We tried, which is what I'd heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And still creating roles. I think we're moving in the right direction. Yeah. But
there's always room for improvement though, right?
Yeah. I think there's room for improvement. I think if anyone thinks that, like, well, we've done it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there's still, like, if we still look at all the nominations and all the things, and they're all worthy and all so great, but if we still look at nominations even alone at the CSAs, like, of where the diversity is, it's still not up there. It doesn't have to be totally equal, but it's not up there. So I think we still have ways to go.
It's interesting. The Academy, Canadian Academy, had sent out a press release talking about the number of females that have been nominated for awards this year. And when you look at Best Drama Series, Frankie Drake Mysteries, female showrunner. Anne with an E, female showrunner. Blood and Water, female showrunner. Working Moms, female showrunner. Second Gen, female showrunners. Female showrunners. I mean, that's great. I mean, when you look at 5 out of the 10 shows that have been nominated for Canadian Screen Awards have women at the top, without even talking about, you know, Winona Earp, where you got another female showrunner. It's just, I'm really impressed and really proud of this industry, because women are just kicking butt when it comes to making good programming.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's always a funny thing, because I'm a female and I'm diverse. So it's like,
yes.
So happy for females to see it. Like, you know, it's always like, and like, yeah, it's good to focus on those positive things. And I've been part of groups and stuff where we've talked to, like, the CRTC, the people who do, like, the funding and stuff.
Right.
To be like, hey, we actually, I was with Jill when she was like proof is in the pudding now with the Writers Guild, that there are enough women with enough experience to be showrunners now.
Absolutely.
To be supporting them as showrunners. Maybe way back when it was like they're like, it was hard to find women, and maybe it was, but now for sure we have enough women to be nominated and enough women to be running shows, and that's like really, really exciting. I'm really happy for that. And I think another big thing too is when you see that the gatekeepers or the people who are in charge having a diverse, that they're diverse, like, mm-hmm. there's more. And I think, and also who are rocking these leadership roles in the broadcaster, you see it change then of who's also running, what kind of content they're picking and stuff as
right,
well.
Right. As we get close to the end of our chat, I wanted to ask you about Private Eyes. Now, have you been involved? I know that they were filming 2 seasons back to back, but maybe they're done production now on the 2 seasons that they were filming back to back, right? Were you involved in seasons 3 and 4?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
So what's that experience been like working with Jason Priestley?
It's great. He's the nicest person ever. Like, actually, for real. Yeah, I did. I came on season 2, and then we did like 3-4, which was like kind of like 3A, 3B.
Yeah, right.
And we'll be doing 4 this summer, I believe.
Okay.
And it's been really good. Genuinely, I've learned a lot watching Jason and Cindy as the leads of the show, what it means to be a lead actor.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean just being, you know, the main person on camera, but it means being a leader on set. Because whatever their attitude is on set, that's kind of going to be the attitude of the crew.
Right.
You know, if your lead's cranky or whatever, then no one wants to be staying there longer. If your lead is a diva, then it allows like the other cast to be divas. So when you have like good people like Jason and Cindy who are really positive and who work really hard, it makes the rest of the crew and the cast want to work hard too.
Yeah.
And that's something like I didn't realize that was also such a big part of the job as well. Because they're tired, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Their face is going.
Again, people think that it's easy to act. It is not easy to act, is it?
Yeah, no, because there's a whole bunch of extra stuff that I just did not know before. Even, like, they were so nice when I first started. They'd be like, they just, like, shift me a little bit. Like, your light's here. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, at the same time, because I'm looking at the 2 cameras.
Right.
I'm like, okay, here's where the 2 cameras are. Now I can do it. But, like, in the beginning, I was like, wow, a lot to learn.
Yeah, it's not all about production vehicles and craft services. There's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you mentioned that you were out in LA, so and I checked with you ahead of time that I was allowed to ask you about what you were doing in LA. So what are you doing in LA?
I'm out here kind of for my first pilot season.
Yeah.
To see what it's like. And it's good. I mean, pilot season has now changed, I've been told, because we have the Netflix and the Hulus and all that.
Yeah.
So they kind of release pilots all year round.
Yes.
So this time of year where like all these pilots are happening is not such a big thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I have gone out for pilots and that's kind of really exciting out here to walk on. Like I walked onto like one of the studios recently. And that was like a really cool thing to feel. Also, they're huge.
Yes.
I got there half hour early and it took me 20 minutes to walk to the right studio.
Oh man.
I was like, oh my goodness. And the vibe is very different. In the casting rooms.
Oh, really? How so?
It's funny. Actually, I find the vibe more formal in Canada, where we have like a prop, like a big camera set up, and like the casting director's behind the table,
okay.
and like there's a TV that they're all watching. Whereas I've walked in, and it's been sometimes just the casting director on a couch.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because because I've heard stories from Hollywood where you walk into a room and it's a room full of people's executives and, you know, everybody. But, I guess things have changed.
Maybe like if I get to testing, like I've been to callbacks and stuff where the executives have been in the room. But that's still been no different than in Canada, like when I went to Private Eyes and it was probably 10 people behind the table. But they still had, in Canada, on Private Eyes, they still had like 10 people behind a table and a TV to watch and a big camera. Whereas this, when I went to this callback, it was still executives, but an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's funny that you mention iPhone, because I know that technology has really changed pilot season and the casting process. So what made you decide to go to LA for pilot season as opposed to maybe self-taping in Toronto?
I think that what I'm seeing is being personable, like meeting people in person.
Face-to-face, yeah.
Yeah, it still counts a lot for people, for getting the casting directors to like you, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like getting to meet people. Because I've also self-taped here, and I've done in-room auditions. And my in-room auditions, I've been getting callbacks and things like that. Whereas my self-tapes, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Did anyone see it?
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, yeah. Like sending off an email and not sure if anybody even bothered to read it.
Yes, absolutely.
So far it's been a positive experience. How long have you been in LA for?
I've been in LA for a month. I'm here for 2 months. And I'm actually, it's really great. I think the biggest difference is I'm living with some really great people. I'm actually living with with Hudson Yang and Jeff Yang. It's the main kid from Fresh Off the Boat.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so they've been really generous with like I went on Fresh Off the Boat for a little bit to watch them film, and I've met like a lot of the Asian industry down here.
Yeah.
And that's been really helpful. I think the main thing in LA is, like, if you go down to find, like, your people and find people to hang out with, mm-hmm. it can be great. Otherwise, I can see how I've had some friends come down here and be like, it's very isolating. And, like, if you're just waiting for auditions, it would suck.
Yeah, it's all about – it's about networking. It's about building those relationships. It doesn't matter what country you're in. You still want to build those relationships.
Yeah, and, like, for me, I hate networking, but if I can just find people I genuinely like, that's okay.
Hey, and you picked a great – I mean, I know it's kind of sort of pilot season, but, man, you've missed the – you totally missed all the snow we've been having here.
Yeah, I know. My boyfriend, every day he's like, look how much snow is in Toronto. He feels so glorified by it. He's here with me as well, and he loves it.
So once pilot season's done, what's the short term while you're waiting to hear back? Do you have some time to do some writing on the side? Or are you working on anything on the down low?
Yeah, well, I'll definitely be coming back for Private Eye, so I only have like a month or two in the middle. Mm-hmm. But I think I'll try. My goal is like, just make a quick short in the middle if I can, or maybe start writing a new pilot idea. But definitely I want to take some time for writing and just re-explore. I'm in that fun, scary place where you're like, oh, I could do anything now again. What do I want to do?
A big thanks to Samantha for taking the time to chat about her career with me. You can find all of our podcasts at tva.com. Just click the podcast tab or subscribe to the podcast via Apple or Google Play. Well, that wraps up another episode. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.